Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail. Welcome, everyone. I want to welcome you to the show. I don't know what it is about that intro. It's so interesting. It's every time I hear it, I get a different sensation about what that means. What would you do if you knew you couldn't fail? I've had so many people tell me I have to change up that question, but let me welcome all of you to the Dr. Pat Show. That is exactly what you're listening to. We've got a great show, great show for you tonight. I have so many questions, and of course, we always get questions from the phenomenal PR people that we work with. But today's show is especially important for a lot of reasons. There's a lot going on in our country about, you know, what sex is, what it isn't, what should be done, what shouldn't be done, whether there is such a thing as the privacy of your own home, and more importantly, the bottom line to the whole conversation about sex. Is anybody getting satisfied? So I've got a great show for you tonight because the best of the best, you know, one of the most highly trained medical professionals, sex teacher, author on a mission to transform our culture's attitude, Sherry Winston is joining us here today. I have got her book in my hot little hands here, Women's Anatomy of Arousal. Not only that, I've already downloaded the Orgasmic Abundance free ebook, and I can't wait to talk about all of this. She's joining me here today beyond just being on a mission right now. But, you know, she is someone that is teaching people through her classes, her workshops for men and women, to just amazingly to celebrate who we are. She is funny. We're going to get a little bit of that tonight. And she has a very unique perspective. And so when we start this conversation, I am so eager to talk with her about holistic sexuality and much more. Her book really does peel back the layers for those of you out there that want to know more about it. You know, peels back the layer around our culture, around sexuality, around sensuality, around whether or not only 10% of the people actually have orgasms or not. And I think that's women. I actually think that number's high. So anyway, we have a great show for you tonight. Can't wait to get this started. And let me introduce you to my very special guest, Sherry Winston. Sherry, it's great to have you. You're great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Certainly a pleasure to talk about my favorite topic.
Of course it is. And let me ask you this question. How did it become your favorite topic?
Well, you know, my background is I spent over 20 years as a nurse midwife, gynecology practitioner, registered nurse, childbirth educator. So if you'd asked me a dozen or more years ago, I would have been all about changing birth in our culture and empowering women to have amazing birth experiences and women to have really great experiences with their own health and their bodies. And after 20 years in that world, my mission shifted, and what I realized is it actually went deeper in because sex is the foundation of everything I'd been doing all those years. So that's how it, that's the direction it went, deeper in, more foundational, because, you know, sex makes life. We're all here because our parents had sex, and if we want to empower women about their bodies, about their health care, and about their births, we're going to have to start by transforming our culture's attitudes about sex. So that's how I got here.
I love it, and I'm so right here with you. So here's going to be a little, you know, a little self-disclosure here for a minute. Down at the spiritual center I attend, they're having this Summer of Love theme, and they're not just the only one. There are a lot of people doing the whole Summer of Love theme. And, you know, they're playing all this 60s music and so forth, right? And I thought to myself, okay, wow, that does take me back. It takes me back to what I remember, what we were calling the Summer of Love. And there were like a bunch of Summer of Loves. Certainly Woodstock was right up there. And there was this notion about sex, sexuality, burning bras, Gloria Steinem, and much more. And someone made a comment to me, Sherry, the other day, knowing that you were coming on the show. And they said, I want you to ask her, what the heck happened to all those flower children? You know, the sexual revolution, did everyone go underground? How did we become so conservative? And I said, I will ask her that. But honestly, Sherry, I don't know if we have. And I wanted to kind of throw that out on the table for a minute.
You know, as always, we're such a multicultural country that even when we look back to those days of Woodstock and free love and so forth, that was still a not everybody. That was a percentage of the population, and the baby boomer generation, of which I'm at the end of, some of them did become more conservative. Some of them, you know, grew up and got jobs and wore suits and went on to have kids themselves, and so some of them have definitely become more conservative, and others not so much. But, you know, I think the thing about sexuality in particular was that there are these pendulum swings, and there was this swing towards this idea that love the one you're with, free love, and that sex is something you can just share with anybody in it. And the truth of the matter is sex is a profound experience, and for some people being casual about it works, but for a lot of people that didn't actually work that well. And I have to say we're still not that far from it in our own younger generation now, because there's this hooking up culture.
Yes.
That again emphasizes a lot of casual sex, and that it, you know, friends with benefits, and sex doesn't have to mean anything. And that's true for some people. That does absolutely work for some people, so I'm not judging it or saying there's anything wrong with it. If it works for you, if you can communicate about your needs and your boundaries, if you can be safe about what you're doing, both in the disease realm, the pregnancy realm, and the emotional potential heartbreak realm. If you can do all that and still want to play and have sex with lots of people, great, enjoy, go be safe, be responsible, and have fun. But most people, sex starts to create attachment when you start having sex with people. And I think a lot of the 60s generation, or really it was mostly happening in the 70s anyway, but
yeah, exactly.
People started to realize that actually sex is more meaningful to them, and that they want to be in relationship with people.
You know, we're going to talk about so many things here. For those of you just tuning in, Sherry Winston is my very special guest here. She's got a phenomenal book, Women's Anatomy of Arousal. It's an award-winning book, and Secret Maps to Buried Pleasure. And, you know, we're going to talk about a number of different things here. And I sort of, you know, teased this idea of, you know, looking at holistic sex, holistic sensuality, number of different layers for it. And let me ask you kind of this question around, you know, the generation we live in now. We have internet out there. We have cell phones that you could look things up on the internet. Some people say we really are, you know, plugged into sex on the internet in a very addictive way. And therefore, there is a line that we cross over. How would you describe this culture, what's happening because of technology, and also kind of the visualization that we are bombarded with on radio and television? You know, how does this affect sex in this society?
Well, I'll start with the holistic sexuality idea, which is really that sex is an integral part of who we are. That it's not a separate thing. It's not about an activity that goes on with another person behind a locked bedroom door. It's part of who we are. And who we are encompasses our mind, our body, our heart, and our spirit. Mm. And sex really is about connection. And first it's about our connection to ourselves, and then about our connection to everything and everyone around us. And what I see in our media and our cultural map of sex a very shallow model. It's about the surface. It's about how things look. It doesn't have a lot of emphasis on integrity or communication. So I think we do have it everywhere. It's in our face. It's all over the place. It's hard to escape it. But I think that cultural map that we're given is wrong in a lot of ways. I think there's a lot of misinformation. I don't think it really helps people have better sex. I mean, internet porn is a great example. I like to say to people, you know, internet porn, remember, it's entertainment, not education. And we need to look at it that way. So I still think we're lacking depth and wholeness in our understanding of what sex is and what it can be. And that's why I think so many people are so unhappy and dissatisfied with their sexuality and their sexual experiences, because we don't have the map that really leads people to being able to experience their own ecstasy. And I mean not the drug kind. I mean the internal pleasure kind. And to feel really not just satisfied, but, you know, blissful about the pleasure we can access. I don't think we get a lot of help in figuring out how to do that or how to do relationship well. Another map we're lacking in our culture. So I think that's where we're at, and hopefully we're going to, you know, now that it's all over the place, maybe hopefully we can start bringing it deeper and making it more real for people.
You know, one of the things that I was really struck by, I think if I would have been doing this show, I'm just going to say 30 years ago, and I would have said the word sex and we would have been having this conversation, we would have pretty much been talking to a mainstream population about sex between men and women. And the landscape has changed. Movies that have come out in our pop culture of gay couples together and so forth. The landscape that you reference, what does it look like?
Well, we are doing better in a lot of ways. I mean, look at what's happening with gay marriage, or, you know, there's a mainstream movie like The Kids Are All Right with a lesbian couple, and it's just normal now. So we're definitely making some progress about having a more inclusive idea of what sex is and who has it with who else. And certainly more and more people are not getting hung up on the plumbing issue. You know, you should only have sex with people who have different plumbing from yours. So we're definitely making progress in some areas. And then there are other areas, solo sex, masturbation, for example. You know, the word masturbation means to pollute with your hand, by the way. To pollute with your hand. Anyway, so we still have a ways to go before we understand that our sexual relationship with ourselves is really that foundational relationship, and it's important and valuable and not something to be ashamed of. And, you know, we're making progress, but we have a way to go. I will say also the internet has made it easier for people to find people with similar interests to them, particularly if they're interests are less mainstream and minority. So for people who are kinky or swingers or into less, so we say, just less common forms of sexual expression, are able to find people. So there's really some wonderful things that the internet has brought us in this way of connecting. In fact, 30 years ago, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Absolutely not. Absolutely,
you know?
Not.
We really have made progress in some ways, and I so appreciate that. And, you know, somebody just tell me they had put up a flyer for a class about orgasmic abundance.
Yes.
And the health food store, and that it was taken down with, you know, because people were appalled that the word orgasm was on a flyer.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Right. Right. And, you know, they should get that Mae West quote then. You should have put that up. What is it, an orgasm a day keeps the doctor away or somebody like that? I mean, you know, it's kind of interesting because I'm so delighted to have you on the show. Sherry Winston is my guest, and the book is phenomenal, Women's Anatomy of Arousal. It's so interesting that you say the word masturbation or even imply it in public or otherwise, and you'll clear a room. But when it comes to actually talking about it in our pop culture, vibrator jokes are pretty much at the top of the stand-up comedian's act these days. You know, it sounds like a disconnect, but it actually isn't. And, you know, in the presence of women, at least that I know of, you know, there are open conversations about that where there never could have been before. And I'm talking, you know, gay women, heterosexual, it doesn't matter. It seems like we've made some progress here in the vibrator range.
We've made progress, and we have made progress, and it's so important to acknowledge. I mean, there's ads for vibrators now on TV and for lubricants.
Oh,
and,
my gosh.
Yeah, and in, you know, catalogs for, I was just thinking the catalog of, you know, handy-dandy home things and, you know, all these little clever things. And sure enough, there's a page with intimate aids. It doesn't say the word vibrator. It doesn't say the word sex. So there's still this very coy language. But it's like, well, look at that. It is progress. We're getting better. We have a way to go, though.
Sherry, what is if I were to ask you on the top three of your list, what are the top three things that are on your radar right now when it comes to sex? You know, what's there tonight for you?
Well, it's an orgasm. I just have orgasm. We're a very goal-oriented culture, so I don't want to make it about this goal that people have to reach. But the fact is that there are a lot of women who've never had an orgasm or are orgasm challenged, and it breaks my heart because a lot of women and men about that issue or other issues, maybe performance issues, are walking around feeling broken. Like everybody else is having a great time except them. You know, when the goodies were getting given out, they didn't get any. And that's just one of the top issues for me, which is about helping people realize just all this stuff is learnable. There's nothing wrong with you. It's just stuff you haven't learned. So that's always at the top of my list. It's been at the top of my list and for a long time. And until we stop having so many people walking around feeling broken about it, I think that's going to stay there.
The next
one would be about relationship integrity. Well, you know, it's like every week we have a new cheater. We have a new person who's, you know, behaving badly. We see it in our sitcoms, in our movies. And what we're not seeing is a model of relationship integrity that says make commitments and keep them. If you make a monogamy commitment, be monogamous. If you don't want to be monogamous, don't make a monogamy commitment. Be polyamorous. Be a swinger. You know, find the people who want the same relationship style you do. And if you're in a monogamous relationship and you don't want to be anymore, then the thing to do is not cheat, but go to your partner and say, this is not working for me. And it might mean you can open your relationship. It might mean you need to complete your relationship. But I want to get this information out to people about how to be in integrity in their relationships. So that would be high on my list.
Yeah, and you know, even in the movie you mentioned, The Kids Are All Right. I mean, honestly, I guess they couldn't make a movie that people would go see without having a little cheating thing go on in there.
Doesn't that seem like the case? The same thing.
Well, I couldn't figure it out otherwise. I don't know. Maybe you can give me some insight to that. But, you know, I guess they couldn't make a mainstream movie about two women together without having that in there to make it, I don't know, controversial enough for people to go to. And so doesn't that sort of thing, you know, support what you're saying? You know, are we elevating sort of let's just say, aren't we breaking down sort of the integrity a bit about relationships by what is being implied in our pop culture?
It's definitely an issue, but I want to go to the even deeper one. You're asking me sort of my three top things, and this might
yes.
be my another one, which is to understand that I don't think humans are a naturally monogamous species.
Mm-hmm.
And you can look at the statistics about cheating, which are 30-40% of women, 50-75% of men. But you can look cross-culturally. You can look throughout history. And if we were a naturally monogamous species, we just would be monogamous. It wouldn't be an issue. So I think we need to get realistic about understanding that we're going to be attracted to more than one person in our lifetime. Now, we might choose to only be sexual with one person in our lifetime, and that's a completely valid choice. But to ignore the reality of the tendency for humans to look around at other people and go, yum, yum, that looks good, ooh, yum. And to just, like, start with acknowledging that that's true and then decide what are we going to do about it. That's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see some, you know, acknowledgement that the sexual urge is not, we're not naturally a monogamous lifetime pair bonding species. And
well,
that
you know,
then deal with the reality.
Well, it's interesting, you know, talking about it that way, because it's we don't really have a forum except perhaps for your work and others that are doing the work, such as yours. We don't have a forum for that conversation. The forum that we have right now is don't cheat, don't look,
right.
Don't look at him, don't look at her, don't look at the six pack, don't do that. If I catch you doing that, right? And then out of that comes arguments, comes a whole bunch of other things. We don't really have a dialogue to say, you know what, honey, I looked at her and that's all I did, and we don't even know where to go from there.
And what we have is the either you're monogamous and you stay true to that, which a sizable percentage of people do, or you're monogamous and you cheat, which a substantial percentage of people do. And we don't have another option that says, could we be consciously non-monogamous, or what can we do with these urges and still remain monogamous? So that's what we're lacking, these other pathways. We have, you know, so much body image issues and, for women and an increasing percentage of men. So for a lot of women, you know, when your partner is looking at porn, for example, and seeing all these porn actresses, the vast majority of women are just going to feel really threatened by that because we don't look like that. That's not a real representation of the enormous range of female beauty out there. So, you know, it raises all of these other issues that we have about what sexy is and how we need to look, and if we don't look that way, we're not. And sexy comes from inside, from confidence and comfort with yourself. And again, that shallow cultural perspective, I think, you know, really feeds that. And the body image issues. There was an interesting study that said it was over 80% of women acknowledge that body image issues arise for them regularly during sex and are an inhibiting and blocking factor for them in their sexual pleasure. Yeah, that's the majority.
It's shocking.
Of women.
It's shocking and true. You know,
yeah,
it's shocking and true. And you know, and part of this is for me, and getting to chat with you tonight is really to touch the tip of the iceberg, maybe, about what you've put in the book. And I wanted to ask you about it. A couple things in the book are just I just want to get to tonight. You know, Women's Anatomy of Arousal. I mean, this is your latest. People have raved about this book. You know, my friend and colleague, Dr. Chris Northrup, as well. And I wanted to ask you, you know, this book says so many different things in it. What are the messages that you wanted to have people, the reader, what are the messages you wanted them to get first and foremost?
Oh, that's a great question. The book really has sort of three sections, and the first one are the new maps and models. So to start reformatting our minds about what sex is and how it operates and how we can get to where we want to be or even what our potential is. So the whole first section is about that. The middle part of the book, the heart of the book, well, the crotch of the book, really, is about female genital anatomy. And I know this is just a shocking statement, but our textbooks, our sex books, everything I learned in all those years I went to school about the female genitalia, which I specialize specialized in was incomplete and often inaccurate. And so what I started to realize in my work, even when I was still a midwife, I was starting on this sort of treasure hunt, well, the pleasure hunt, really, right?
Right.
To starting to discover there were things, there were parts that I had that all women have that I had never heard of, that I didn't learn about. And that's crazy. This isn't rocket scientists. It's just the body. So we really need to know what we've got and how it operates and how we can make it operate better. And I will say it's certainly it's about pleasure, but it's also about health. There are enormous health implications in not understanding our equipment and having our medical professionals not understand it. And I'll just give you one example.
Yeah, yes, that. Please.
Our uterus, the uterus is a player in arousal and orgasm. And I didn't learn that in school, and this country, we've got a shockingly high rate of hysterectomy. Over a third of women over the age of 60 don't have a uterus anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And women are routinely told by their doctors that having a hysterectomy, having their uterus removed, is not going to affect their sexual experience. And that's just not true, because the uterus does have a sexual function. But I didn't learn about that in school. And so, again, it's not just about pleasure. It's about health and pleasure, which are completely connected. Anyway, then the last part of the book is about how you can apply all this information and learn how to really use all the tools that you have, that you came equipped with, to have the most amazing and extraordinary sexual experiences. And even though the book is predominantly written about women, I will say pretty much all of the maps and models and the paths to how to get to these extraordinary experiences apply to men as well.
And you know what? It's a great gift, ladies. Whether you're with a man or a woman, I'll tell you, it is a great gift to be given this book to somebody. Let's tell people, before we jump into holistic sexuality, I want to take a moment, and I want to make sure folks know how to find out more about you, Sherry, because you really offer a ton of great information, free information on your website. So let's give out your website.
Well, I run the Center for the Intimate Arts, and you can find our website at intimatearts.com. And yep, there's free ebooks and some Ask the Sex Teacher Anything audios and webinars, and they can look at the book there and order the book there. They can find out about the retreats I run and the classes and online classes, which are webinars. So you hear me talking and you see images and you can watch it at home. And so we've got lots of ways and more coming all the time.
Well, I got to tell you, I got my eyes on, okay, I have got my eyes on, Sherry did mention this, but I'm going to mention it. Okay, so if you go to her website, you go click on retreats, everybody, okay? There are a couple of them. I got my eye on the Costa Rica retreat that you were doing in January of 2012.
Oh, my gosh, that's going to be amazing. A whole week.
Well, and one of the things I wanted to ask you, you say it's for men and women and singles and partners.
Yeah, almost everything I do is.
Good.
Because, as I was saying before, your sexuality is foundationally about your relationship with yourself. And we tend to think it's something we do with other people, but it begins with you. So the retreats, I'm doing another one in September in upstate New York. That's a three-day retreat with another sex teacher, Giles, who's a fantastic teacher. And then I'm doing the Costa Rica one in January. And these are just opportunities for anybody, no matter what your gender, your orientation, your plumbing, your partnership status, to really learn how to play your own instrument.
I love it.
You know how to play your instrument, well, then you can play solos, then you can play duets, whatever you like.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Let's talk about holistic sexuality, WHOLISTIC, holistic sexuality. First question's got to be, what is it? How are you describing it? I know how you're doing in the book, but I want our listeners to hear this.
Well, for starters, I really believe sex is our vital life force. It's our life energy. And maybe that goes back to my days of being a midwife, where I got to be there when babies are born. But sex made us. Sex made those babies. And it's sexual energy that is our vital life force. And so rather than looking at it as something shameful as activities, to really start to recognize that sexual energy is what makes all multicellular life, the whole complex, diverse world is here because of that sexual urge to mate and merge and procreate. And so to me, it's a thing that's both sacred and to be celebrated and to be understood. And so the holistic sexuality model starts with that foundational idea, then about the idea that this is about your relationship with yourself. If you want to have great relationships with other people, you need to have a great relationship with yourself and our whole selves. As I said before, our mind, our body, our heart, our spirit, our past, our present, and every future we imagine. And also, you know, the wonderful thing about human sexuality that's just so fascinating, you know, we're different from all the other animals, except for a few, because we can have sex whenever we want. Most other animals, sex happens when the female is in heat, when she's fertile. Not with humans, because for us, sex isn't just about reproduction. It's about connection and relationship and attachment and pleasure and reproduction and fertility and all of those things. And they're all connected for us. So that's why I think about this as the connection paradigm, that it's about understanding those connections, understanding how it operates, and understanding that for us, sex is both natural and learned. That there's the part of us that's the hardware, that's our ancient biological template, and that's real and that's part of our sexuality. It's like what I was saying before, that, you know, just walking around, going, looking around, going, yum, you know, that's part of the programming that's in there. So we need to learn how to understand that and not be ashamed of it, not be ashamed of that sexual urge that arises, that's what created us and brought us here, and we're the learning animals. So for us, just like learning another language or learning to play an instrument, sex is also learned, and that's why wherever you are in your learning journey, you can learn more if you want to. You don't have to, but you can. Like learning to play an instrument. You don't have to learn how to play the piano, but if you want to, you can. And you'll have to practice. And if you want to become a sexual virtuoso and a master of your own erotic energy, you will definitely need to practice, but that doesn't necessarily involve a partner. You can practice and learn with yourself. And in fact, if you really want to be a master of anything that you do, it does take practicing and learning with yourself. So those are all parts of that whole big whole sexuality model that I developed.
Let's see if we can get at the truth of something. I got a couple of questions being instant feedback being sent in here from our listeners. One of them is this: wow, this show is pretty hot. Got a question for Sherry. You know, it seems like if you turn 40, you're on your way to it seems like as a woman, if you turn 40, you're on your way to 50. If you're 50, you might as well shut it down. Our pop culture would have us believe that sex doesn't really happen after the age of 50. And this is confusing to me. And how do I get support? How can I become the sexual being that I know that I'm meant to be? So really the question, Sherry, is about ageism around sex.
Well, we certainly have it. Our culture says it, you know, in order to be sexy, you have to be young and slender and look a certain way. And I actually think that we're confusing reproductive maturity with actual sexual maturity. Reproductive maturity means you can make a baby, and that happens fairly young. But true sexual maturity, I think, takes confidence, experience, wisdom, and I think for most of us, that doesn't happen until we've had a number of decades under our belt. So I like to say that true sexual maturity usually goes along with some wrinkles, some gray hair, and some cellulite. So I think that that's an important model that we have to hold out. Then I do think we want to understand that sex does also change for people as we age, and not expect it necessarily to be the same experience we had when we were 20. I mean, when I was 20, I used to go out dancing all night, and now it's like, really? I don't want to go. I don't even want to go out dancing all night.
Oh, man, I'm in by 9:30 if I do go. Isn't that, that's, I'm sorry about that, but that's just the truth of that.
Exactly. So I think we want to be realistic about the changes that happen with our sexuality while still understanding that for a lot of people, the best sex we're going to ever have in our life is going to happen as we get older, as we get more comfortable, more assured. You know, in order to be a virtuoso of something, to really master any skill or craft, it takes 10,000 hours, they say. So one of the things about sex is it should and can get better as we get older. And more expanding of what sex is. If, for example, as men age, erection might not be as quick and assured as it was when they were younger. And some people can look at that and go, oh, no, this is terrible. My erection is failing me. And other people could look at that and go, oh, well, this is giving me the opportunity to slow down and be more whole body oriented in my sexuality and explore things I might not have explored before. You know, so we can look at the changes as opportunities as well. You know, I had this wonderful couple that I was counseling. They were in their 80s. And she was coming to me about a health issue, but it was great because they started the session by saying, oh, yeah, we can't have intercourse anymore. That's just, you know, not in our repertoire anymore. But we have so much fun. We do this. We do that. We've got such a great sex life. And I just was so appreciating that rather than looking at this as a terrible, devastating loss, they just looked at it as an opportunity to try new things and explore different ways to be sexual with each other. So I think we want to be realistic about the changes of aging and also see the opportunities that happen either, you know, as we get older or if we have health issues or disability issues, that can be a wonderful opportunity to expand what we do.
Well, you know, and this leads to another question that had come in earlier. And the question is around what seems to be the rise in incest. Now, I'm not sure if there is a rise in incest or we're just getting more reports of it. But the question comes in about, you know, how does one go about the healing process if you have been a victim of incest and you're now late in life just discovering those issues? I mean, how does one go about the healing process? And can someone that has a history of abuse, whether it's incest or otherwise, how do they, Sherry, get to the place where they can feel good about themselves and good in relationship?
That's a fabulous question. We could spend a whole show.
I hope you'll come back and do that with me. I would love to do a show on that.
We could. That would be, you know, there's so much to talk about. But what I'll say, so the short answer is, it is possible to heal this. I have met so many people, including people who are teachers of sexuality, who've gone through that journey. And I think there's a couple of essential ingredients. I mean, one is acknowledging it. One is just telling the truth as best you can about what happened. And this goes for all kinds of sexual trauma.
Right.
So many people have experienced. So starting with telling the truth. And then you need to create a support team. I'm sure there are people who have healed these things all by themselves, but most people I know who've gone through a healing journey have had support with therapists and groups and friends. And there's wonderful books and workshops and retreats and things, you know, like I teach or... So get that support team. Find the people who've been on that healing journey and they've written a book about it or can be a counselor to you so you have guides. You don't need to figure that out all by yourself. It is a process. It is a journey. It is going to take time. And it can be done. Some of the most sexually empowered people I've ever met are people who have reclaimed their sexuality fiercely because they've been through that journey. So That's
oh, thank you.
The shortest answer I can make.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. It's definitely certainly an issue that we've talked about here on the Dr. Pat Show several times. And there is a lot of information. You're absolutely right about that. You know, one of the things
for that, you know, that's a real shift too in our culture.
It is
that there are these resources out there. People aren't having to deal with this in isolation anymore. So that's a real step forward that we have.
I think it is, because if we're not talking it as part of the media, and especially the reach that we have on the Dr. Pat Show, if we can't talk about it in a healing way, then how are the people out there going to get enough information about what's happening so they can at least rise up? I mean, this is what I hear so often, Cherry. You know, people that have been in abusive relationships, whether it be a sexual abuse or incest or otherwise, you know, the hardest thing that they really struggle with is this idea of rising up. You know, their self-esteem, their self-worth, their body image. Can they love? So maybe we should do a show on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because, again, it starts with that relationship with yourself. It's about healing that shame inside yourself. That's the big challenge. And it's possible. And that's why I want everyone to know that, you know, wherever you are on your journey, there is hope. And there's healing and there's learning. And you're not stuck there in that place for the rest of your life if you choose to not be there.
You know, you are an educator. And this show it's packed with lots of information. But for those of you that are listening, I will love to encourage you to get a copy of Sherry's book, Women's Anatomy of Arousal. And also, if you go to the website, you know, just check it out. What you're going to find is a lot of information. And Sherry's website is intimatearts.com. That's arts with an S. intimateartscenter.com. Lots of information. You can get on the newsletter, find out about the retreats and much more. Sherry, I wanted to, you know, to ask you about the here and now. You know, we fast forward to today. We've talked about a number of different things, and one of the things I think that, you know, we haven't really jumped into is that this is what I need to know to have great sex tonight with my partner. This is what I should have at my fingertips or in my bedroom or close to me or somewhere. Tonight's the night. It's going to happen. And it's almost as if we're ashamed to plan this. You see what I'm saying?
Yes. So, we have a myth that sex is only good if it's spontaneous.
Yes.
It's only good if desire overtakes you and you succumb to it without any planning or timing or setting up. And I think that, you know, one of the big topics these days is sort of sexless marriages and
yes.
and that whole, you know, where sex after a baby comes and we're so busy. And and I think the truth is, if you want to have a great sex life with yourself or your partner, it takes planning. It takes scheduling. It takes... You know, I'm a night owl. My partner's an early bird. If we don't plan, you know, some nice weekend, mid-afternoon time, we're not going to get those nice, long, leisurely dates that I like to have at least sometimes. I mean, you know, it's one thing if you're going to squeeze in a quickie or a short session in your busy everyday lives, but to really kind of look at your calendar and go, okay, Sunday afternoon, 11 o'clock to 3 o'clock, we got that mapped out for intimacy time. And I think we need to do that because otherwise we're not going to get it.
I know. I mean, my gosh. I mean, you got to go out and get the chocolate and strawberries, don't you?
Why not? You know, or, you know, or just taking the time to shift your environment a little,
yes.
lighting some candles or putting on music or lighting some incense or some aromatherapy is really also important because we need to shift out of our everyday mundane world and our everyday busyness and our work and our family and everything. There's so many pressures, and in order to shift into lover space, doing those little things of taking a nice shower and putting on your silk robe and lighting candles, just it shifts everything, and it just toggles you into, oh, now it's time for intimacy and pleasure and connecting. We can do that with ourselves. I want to say this again. We can have a hot date with ourselves or with a partner, whether we're partnered or not. So it's really special when we do those little things. And rather than feeling like, well, the planning is bad, we can just look at that as an opportunity to create really effective strategies to have more pleasure in our lives.
You know, this is probably going to be my last question, because this one is a doozy. I was having a conversation with someone a couple of days ago, and, you know, she was saying our folks learn about our upcoming interviews way in advance. And so she was saying, you know, this is really the challenge. She said, here I am with my partner, and we're having sex, and I'm trying to direct the action, she said. This is what she said. And what she's trying to say is, I'm trying to communicate to my lover what feels good for me. Mm-hmm. And what she said, Sherry, is this was so difficult to do. And ultimately, what was said was like, what are you all of a sudden, a sex coach? And so let's talk about this whole idea of actually getting our needs met by letting our partner know what's working and what's not.
Oh, it's such a good and big question. And I'll go back for a moment to the maps we don't have. We have no modeling in our TV shows or our movies or books, anything about sexual communication. We, you know, in the movies, they run towards each other and their clothes fall off and they're kissing and they're making passionate love and the fireworks go off. You never once hear anybody going a little to the left. You know? By the way, what are we doing about birth control? You just don't hear any communication. So I think it is a challenge to learn how to do it and how to do it well. And I think we can get very stuck because we don't want our partners to feel criticized. We don't really want, actually, I don't think we really want to be directing all the action. I think part of going into our sexual trance, and arousal is a trance state, is we'd like to be able to not be the driver of the car, right? We don't want to be navigating and driving. We want to actually relax into the pleasure of it. So we don't necessarily want to be going, okay, now go to the knee, and now 1 inch at a time, work your way up the inner thigh, not too fast. You know, I mean, we don't really want that level of directing our partner, because we're not going to be in our pleasure then either. So it is an art form to learn effective sexual communication. And I think one of the ways to do it is to actually set up dates with our partner that are dates for learning and playing, that are actually games where we can practice those skills that are sort of separate from our regular sexual experiences. So we might want to have a game about feedback where maybe our partner is just giving us a foot massage, right? Make it not as fraught and not and practice how to give feedback about what pleasures us in a positive way. So and maybe we want to take 30 minutes one night and give each other 15-minute foot massages and practice giving exquisite feedback. And we can come up with lots of different games like that. But here's just a suggestion. When we frame our feedback in a positive way, and even in an erotic way, then that's going to add to the experience. So rather than going, oh, I don't like that. Oh, I can't believe you're doing that thing again. I told you, I hate that thing, right? Or you're doing it wrong, or ow, you know, any of those things, that's not really going to help the sexual energy thrive between us and our partner. But if we can start with a positive, like when something isn't quite right. So maybe your partner is stroking your thigh, and you're not liking how they're doing it. But rather than go, oh, I don't like that, go, I love that you're paying attention to my thigh. My thigh loves the attention. And not but, and it would feel even better if you did it really slowly. Oh, that's so good. Even slower. Oh, that would be so hot if you did it just excruciatingly slow. Oh, yeah, baby. Oh, my gosh. That is so hot. I love that touch. I love that slow stroking touch. Something like that is going to add to the sexual fuel rather than turning them off. So starting with the positive, encouraging, and speaking what you want in a way that is about your pleasure. And then, what don't we all want to give our partners pleasure? I mean, of course we do. So when we know that we're doing something that gives them pleasure and then they're guiding us how to give them more pleasure, that's hot, as opposed to deflating the sexual energy. So, but we have to train ourselves to be able to do that.
Well, do you, and this is, you know, part of the conversation I was having with this person the other day. It was, okay, you know, is it the thing to do to have conversations about our sexual life when we're actually not having sex? How do we go about having that conversation to provide information? And I said to her, are you talking like over breakfast or something? Mm-hmm. And I think this is really the struggle. And this is a woman. So, I don't know if it's the same for men. But this was the struggle. You know, and I could hear her pain in that, Sherry. Mm-hmm. She doesn't even know when to have a conversation with her partner about it.
Well, I'll tell you, I do think we want to have and need to have conversations about our sex when we're not having it. And when we're bringing up something that's difficult or we haven't done it before, to start by saying what's true for you, which might be something like, you know what, honey, I really feel like we need to talk about our sex so it will get better, because I love you so much and I want our sex to just keep getting better and better. And so I know we need to talk about it, but I'm really feeling shy about it, or it's uncomfortable and it's kind of weird, but I know that if we talk about it, it's going to get better. So I'm going to be brave, even though I'm feeling nervous, and figure out how to have a conversation with you about this. So start by saying what's true. I feel nervous about this, or I don't know how to talk about this, or I don't know how to bring it up, or think about what the time is. You don't want to do it right before you've got to run out the door in 5 minutes, or the kids are about to burst in the room. So find some time to have those conversations. And I'll give one other tip, which I think is a really easy one, which is after you're done having sex, we like to call this playing the highlights tape. You know, like after a sporting event, they go over the game highlights.
Yes, exactly.
So after you're done, you can play this little game, and you can tell your partner, oh, that moment when you just looked in my eyes and just everything stopped and you just gave me this love look. Oh, my gosh, that was so special to me, you know. Or you can go, oh, when you were sucking my toes, whoa, that just really worked for me. And this is another way we can learn about the things our partner liked, plus we get an extra little erotic thrill about hearing it afterwards. So it's a great little game. And you just stick with the positives, right? If you've got criticism or things you want to talk about, save that for the next day or a separate session. But after you're done, play the highlight tape and remind each other of those great moments and what really worked and what you really liked. And that will help build up your repertoire of knowledge and information about each other and get you in that place where it becomes easier to talk about.
Wow. Sherry, this has been great. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. It's fabulous being on your show. I think you're wonderful. So it's just a delight for me to chat with you about all this.
You as well. And I hope we will be able to schedule a show and talk about incest and abuse and talk about, what are the taboos? What are we not talking about? But also provide some information for our listeners. It is still, as you know, a conversation that most people don't have. And it's extremely difficult. But let me just, kudos for the book. Love the book. Love your work. And thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thanks so much for having me. Like I said, it is such a pleasure.
All right, everybody. Sherry Winston, I want to send you to the website one more time because I already downloaded a whole bunch of things here. Go to IntimateArtsCenter.com. That's arts with an S. So it's IntimateArtsCenter.com. Lots of information. The book, you'll see it. Lots of freebies. Information about the retreat. The Learning Center on the website has webinars, audio, video, quotes, resources, you name it. Sherry, you rock. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. Everybody out there, you rock too. And so if you really want to rock a bit more sexually, Women's Anatomy of Arousal, that's the book. We'll see you next time on the Dr. Pat Show.
Soapbox is way too high overgrown. You can barely see the ground or touch the sky. Your high horse is taking off and left to you, nowhere to be found. Better off dead, or so you said, but don't worry, we all fall down somehow.
Oh, someday.